Thank you, Ryan. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. Bill, I had to look this up, but when we were sophomores or juniors in high school,
yes.
1980,
yes.
Iraq invaded Iran. There was a conflict there. We were involved. And now I have a kid about that age who is concerned that there's going to be another Iran war, I guess I should say. So on the line with us right now to make heads and tails of this is Tom Mikaitis. He's a terrorism expert. He's a professor of history at DePaul University. And you also have your new book that is out today, right, Tom?
Yes, that's correct.
And what's it called?
The advanced copies. Violent Extremists, Understanding the Domestic and International Terrorist Threat. I've just sent a copy to you.
Oh, sweet. Thank you very much.
Thank you for that, Tom.
No problem.
So 1980 is when the Iran-Iraq conflict happened originally, and now some new things bubbling over in Iran. Talk to us about this.
Well, you know, yes, I remember that. And, of course, one of the dynamics that has happened in the region is that by invading Iraq, we've actually upset the balance of power. Iran and Iraq were always played off against one another. In the days of the Shah, we used Iran as the counterbalance in Iraq. We then used, you know, quite cynically early on, Saddam Hussein against to balance Iran, especially after the Islamic Revolution and the Iran hostage crisis. So, you know, we have a very long established situation here. And you mentioned making sense of it. There's a saying among Middle East experts, if you aren't confused, you really don't understand. I mean, this is a very complicated, very tangled kind of mess that we're in here.
Tom, our relationship, the U.S.'s relationship with the region, has always been very tentative. Sometimes we're allies of one or the other, sometimes both, sometimes neither, correct?
That's absolutely true. There have generally been underlying, and there still are to some degree, underlying strategic imperatives, the security and safety of Israel, maintaining access to the supply of oil, reducing terrorism, maintaining some kind of balance of power. Much of that has been thrown into confusion by the events of the last decade.
All right. So the newest, I don't even know what to call it, and I know that people are a little fearful. Are we going to war with Iran? I know an unmanned drone was shot down.
Mm-hmm.
And what the Strait of Hormuz, was it? Is that where it was shot down? I remember
that.
Gulf
of Oman, but they're very closely connected. But yeah, there's a debate as to where it was shot down. I mean, that's part of it.
Okay. And so our president, President Trump, said he tweeted some things, which I find really weird that he's going through Twitter to talk about plans. You know, they will pay or they will regret this. I don't remember his exact tweet. And then there was going to be retaliation, but then he pulled back. Why? Talk to us about this. Make some sense of it.
Well, the thing to keep in mind, this president has never been terribly interested in immersing himself in the details of, you know, policy, to be quite honest. He's an image maker, and he's a showman to a very significant degree. So, you know, he really doesn't want a war here. I mean, the thing that's kind of puzzling in some ways is, you know, he is right now the moderator. He's arguing for restraint, and I think the main reason is this is a distraction from his 2020 campaign. He does not want another Middle East war. So he almost gave Iran a pass yesterday when he said, well, you know, this could have been a local individual who made a mistake, which, quite honestly, is a plausible explanation. Iran claims more territorial water than the international community recognizes. So both sides could be right when they say where the drone was, based on their assumptions. The other is, I don't know how centrally integrated the Iranian air defense system is. It's not implausible that a local decision to fire could have been taken. The other is, and this is something that's very hard for us to understand, is this is a country with multiple power centers. Now, I think Americans have a hard time with how much of the world there are alternative centers of sovereignty and power within countries where we're used to that being a much more, you know, centralized sort of thing. So right now, I think there's no desire on the part of most people in positions of power to go to war. The real danger is we could blunder into one when you've got so much hardware and so much tension in a confined space. the risk of something going wrong is not insignificant.
Tom, the story that we're hearing today is that when it came to the counterstrike last night, President Trump asked his advisors how many lives this would be costing, and it was somewhere in the neighborhood of 150, to which he said, no, let's pull back then. This isn't equal to them hitting an unmanned drone. I'm no fan of the president's, but I respect it. If that was the true decision, then I respect that decision. Is it likely that's the way it played out, or is that just a story we're being told?
It is plausible, and if it is plausible, then you're right. I would agree with you. Then I think that was a very good decision. The other thing is, the person who is chomping at the bit to go to war is John Bolton. I mean, he's been an Iran hawk. He makes no secret of his desire to have regime change, quite honestly, in Iran. The U.S., apparently the general in charge of U.S. Central Command, is also a bit of a hawk on this. But the president has kind of pulled back. And I think what's curious about a lot of this is all of these incidents have been very, very meticulously conducted to prevent any loss of life. The damage to the tankers was to basically incapacitate them. They didn't even sink them. And if you can get close enough, whoever did it, by the way, now I think the odds are very high that it was someone within the Iranian regime. But if you can get close enough to put a mine on the side of the tanker, you could have done a lot more damage. But they didn't want to kill anybody, and they didn't want to create a major catastrophe. So this is in some ways a bizarre form of both sides doing strategic communication with very low-level kind of activity.
I'm going to ask probably a stupid question, and I'm apologizing for it in advance. This is why I always lost the game of Risk when we played Risk.
Mm-hmm. But, one of my favorites growing up, but anyway, go ahead.
But boy, do you get the power when you're playing that game. You take over a country, mm-hmm. you want more. I see where it happens.
So
there's a drone flying over the sea and checking things out in Iran, and it's shot down. Is that a big deal?
Yes and no. It depends on how big a deal we choose to make it. The president has chose to make it less of a big deal than some of his advisors have because he says, look, nobody was killed. It could have been a mistake. Quite honestly, that's true. And if what we're hearing is true, that he said this isn't worth taking any lives over, he's absolutely right. Especially when it was very close to the internationally recognized line, and as I view it anyway, the Iranians could say, well, we claim a wider territorial waters. This happens all over the world, by the way. There are many countries that claim much greater territorial waters than is allowed by international law.
Why was it there, do you think? I mean, what would we do if there was a foreign drone flying over the United States?
We would quite possibly shoot it down, just as the Russians shot the U-2 spy plane down, during the Cold War. I mean, we do these things all the time. I'm sure there were flyovers in high altitude and satellite and all kinds of surveillance. In this case, I think quite probably it was not in Iranian territorial waters, as we understand them, and I say that advisedly. But I think, there's no question we're doing flyovers and surveillance and reconnaissance of this entire region on a regular basis. I don't think there's anything unusual about that.
Tom, this was an unmanned drone that was initially shot down. Would the storyline be different if that was a plane that had somebody in it?
Absolutely, especially if the person had been killed. There's no question about that. That would probably have raised the temperature to the point, and the president, in fact, hinted at that any loss of life would be the line in the sand, although, lines in the sand have a way of getting erased very quickly. But, sure. But there's no question that I'm very grateful that didn't happen. But see, that's the concern, is you've got everybody on a bit of a hair trigger. It just doesn't take much for things to get out of hand.
I have to say, as I'm not typically a supporter of President Trump, if it is in fact true that he said it's not equal, there was no lives lost, so let's hold back, I applaud him. I have to say that loud and proud right now.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. I mean, I think that part of, being an objective analyst on these sorts of things is to to not be stridently partisan and to recognize, you know, appropriate behavior when it happens. And if he continues to be and to exercise restraint, I think the worry is there's a mercurialness to his actions. I mean, the tweets say one thing, he says another. But so far, and I think the reasons, as I said, I think there's a very compelling reason, and that is he really sees this as an interference in how he wants to present himself in the 2020 campaign. He's said quite forcefully, no more Middle Eastern wars. And, you know, the risk of trouble throughout the region, if we were to do anything, is not insignificant. They have quite a network of proxies and allies, you know, including Lebanon, Syria, a big time in Iraq, Afghanistan, Yemen, possibly even the Gaza Strip. You know, and, you know, some of our allies would be happy to see us take Iran down a peg. The Emirates and Qatar, probably Saudi Arabia for sure. Israel is not happy with the Iran deal and is happy we pulled out of it, but they don't particularly want a war because they could very easily suffer the worst consequences of it via attacks from Lebanon, trouble in Gaza, and Iran has a lot of intermediate range missiles quite capable of hitting targets in Israel. So, you know, this could get ugly very quickly if this escalated to military action.
We're talking with Tom Mikaitis, terrorism expert, professor of history at DePaul University. His new book, Violent Extremists, Understanding the Domestic and International Terrorist Threat, is available today. We'll take a quick break. If you have any questions or comments, 312-981-7200. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder on WGN.
It's Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder, and coming up, the stories that matter with David Jennings. He is poised and ready in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. But until news time, we're talking to a terrorism expert and professor of history at DePaul University, Tom Mikaitis. His new book, Violent Extremists, Understanding the Domestic and International Terrorist Threat, is available now. Tom, a lot of texts are coming in, and again, questions are taken, 312-981-7200. When Donald Trump tweeted, you know, something about Iran, you know, this was a big mistake, then it was it came to the forefront that Putin said, you know, any kind of retaliation against Iran would be a bad thing. Does that have anything to do, according to this texter, with maybe why Donald Trump changed his mind?
I don't think so. I think it's more the case that we have to think about audience. We sometimes forget that Donald Trump's tweets are really aimed for his base. And so he's always going to sound more bellicose, more strident in his tweets. And, you know, that if you keep that in that context, that's probably what that is. Yes, I mean, even going all the way back to the Iran hostage crisis, that time the Soviet Union said they would not tolerate or accept the U.S. putting forces into Iran. I mean, in any kind of extended basis or anything like that. So, again, you know, even given the contemporary spin on things, even the other regional players have their long-term strategic interests, which don't change just because the occupants of the Kremlin or the White House do. So, yes, they would not be in favor of the intervention there. And let's be clear, Russia and Iran are indirectly allies in that they're not direct allies, but they both support the Assad regime in Syria. So, you know, and again, part of what Russia's benefited from with the Trump administration's, you know, isolationist America First policy is that their stature in the region has increased. So, yeah, they're not going to be in favor of it. You know, the other thing, too, look at worst-case scenario. Well, I mean, possible scenarios. I very much doubt military action, if it were to occur, would extend much beyond focused pinprick strikes. Now, if Iran escalates beyond that, there's always a danger of getting out of control. But, I mean, don't look for any kind of major invasion here. I mean, the 1,000 troops that we sent is mainly for show. I mean, you know, that's not much. And we do move people in and out of the region on a pretty regular basis.
Tom, do foreign powers, terrorist or otherwise, take into account our election schedule when planning their deeds?
They do. In fact, you know, we know, for example, that if you look at the trade war with China, they, you know, very carefully calculated some of their, you know, their counter tariffs to target red states, particularly agricultural products and so on. Yeah. So, yeah, absolutely. They're quite savvy on this. You know, non-state actors are a little harder to predict. They tend to go for the symbolic and so on. You know, and this, however, I don't think there's any. This has been building up throughout the first half of 2019, so I don't think it's linked to that. I think what is more behind it is designating the entire the Revolutionary Guard as a terrorist organization and continuing to screw down on these really unnecessary sanctions to the point where you're backing the Iranians into a corner and causing them serious economic difficulty, because we just before this took away some of the exceptions we allowed for some people to actually buy Iranian oil and so on. So, you know, it we really have unnecessarily turned the heat up underneath Iran before this thing, even this latest round of escalation developed.
I only ask because if you know anything about Donald Trump, you know that he's very, very reactionary. So I wonder if they calculate that in, if they're one chess move ahead on something like this, saying, well, he'd want to react, but he can't react because the re-election is a few years away.
Well, you know, I think that would be a dangerous calculation, given as mercurial as he can be. I think, ironically, one of the things that will actually restrain him is when people start saying, well, John Bolton's really the guy calling the shots.
Yeah,
right.
You know, they did that with Bannon, you know, and Bannon was gone. You know, I mean, he does not like the idea that anyone is controlling him. But on the other hand, you know, there is this concern that whoever he talks to last can sometimes, you know, he can then come sometimes react, and he's very reactive in the sense that, you know, firing out these tweets and so on. But so far, you know, it's looking, you know, I'm cautiously optimistic. I mean, I'm as I said, I'm more worried to, you know, if you've got, you know, two, you know, people in a crowded bar who are on opposite sides of a sporting event, you know, you can easily bump into somebody, and if you're looking for a fight, you'll probably find one.
Yep.
That's the kind of scenario that bothers me here.
I'm kind of torn between how I feel about these tweets coming out from President Donald Trump. Half of me likes it because so I know what's going on, but half of me almost feels like I wish I didn't know some of this stuff.
Well, I mean, there's no question his tweets are problematic because, I mean, he's blindsided his own advisors on a number of occasions with tweets. And that has, you know, that creates a level of uncertainty. But as I said, I think if we look at that, if we look at strategic communication and say, okay, this isn't helpful, but his tweets are really aimed at his Twitter followers and his base. And they love this stuff. They love the tough braggadocio and the whole nine. I mean, notice how he began his rally down in Florida. You know, I'm going to start massively deporting people and so on and so on. Is that really going to happen? Probably not. That is aimed at his base. So some of the more bellicose tweets on the Iran thing are aimed at his base. But that base also doesn't want another war. But anyway,
The human Prozac, that's what we like to call you. Again, you've made me feel a little better about conflict with Iran at this point.
It's Tom Mikaitis.
You can tell your son he doesn't have to worry about his draft and send off to war.
Tom Mikaitis' new book is called Violent Extremists, Understanding the Domestic and International Terrorist Threat. Tom, thank you so much. Appreciate your expertise.
All right. You guys have a nice weekend.
Absolutely. Thank you.